When we think of music festivals today, we still find ourselves married to this image of Woodstock. We've open fields, big stages, thousands of people probably suffering from questionable hygienic choices, and lots of booze and drugs. And to be honest, not much has changed. If anything, the idea of a music festival has been streamlined into a rite of passage for young adults. Coachella, into Sasquatch, into Sled Island, into Pemberton, there's just so many choices. And they're all big productions and frankly aren't very cheap. But sometimes, you don't need to spend hundreds of dollars or travel hours away to see great music or party hard. Of course, if you're from Vancouver, you probably already know this. Because you have music waste. Every June, for 4 days and $15, all you need to do is hop on your bike and bounce around from venue to venue. That's it. That's music waste. And for Vancouver's music community, it's kind of become this unofficial kickoff to summer. But there's a lot more to it than that. Music waste comes from a true anti-establishment sentiment, born out of a sarcastic discontent with corporate music and their sponsors. There's a spirit to this festival that's rooted in history and has allowed for it to survive for 20 plus years, outliving many of the big box competitors that it was created to protest against.
For me, I think music waste is this space that is very unique to Vancouver.
This is Eleanor Waring. She's a coordinator for Music Waste.
Because the festival doesn't take itself too seriously and because it's kind of volunteer run and most of the bands are really relaxed that are playing it as well, when stuff does go wrong or something happens with a venue or something has to shift, everybody kind of really has this can-do attitude where they're like, yep, okay, we're just gonna, that doesn't work, so we're gonna see what are our other options, like who can I call in for favors, like, and because everybody loves Music Waste, they're often very willing to help and to kind of overcome those hurdles.
And that's the big takeaway from Music Waste, the message from the community to itself. Don't take yourself too seriously. Now, when the original started in 1994, this was the idea. It was to push back against a festival that did take itself far too seriously and forced people to kind of bump elbows and pay to play. Initially, it was a one-off, but then it started to grow. After a couple years of hiatus, this festival was revisited again in the new millennium. This is Dustin Bromley. He used to be a coordinator for Music Waste.
So as I understand it, there was New Music West, which was, very, let's say, corporation funded. And, you know, there's a lot of your Nickelback style bands, your radio rock bands. And apparently their selection process was a little more, elite, or they were definitely going after a certain sound, very, very just like easy on the ears. And these bands, as it's been told, were doing things that have been done, you know, thousands of times before. Cool. And a group of people started a one-day festival called Music Waste, which, as I mentioned, is a big, big middle finger to the sky to New Music West. And in subsequent years, it expanded to a multiple-day festival.
But it really wasn't until the revival in 2004 that Music Waste became the festival that we would recognize it as today. This is Sarah Cordingly. She's one of the people that was around Music Waste at the time of its rebirth.
I was an intern at the Terminal City Weekly magazine, and some of the people there, in particular, John Cow, who was the music editor at the Terminal City at the time, and Darren Atwater, who was the editor, they sort of remembered or thought back nostalgically about Music Waste and thought they should resurrect it, and they... I believe they actually talked to Chris Wood, who was one of the original organizers. They bought it from him for $50 or something, or maybe even less, and they sort of took it over. And the first year was really successful and really fun, and to me, really sort of embodied exactly what it was meant to be, where it was sort of just chaos, and everyone was just organizing it out of the good of their hearts, and no one was really making any money.
While New Music West no longer existed, the ideals did. The idea that networking, self-promotion, and presentation were more important than the artistry behind the music was, and still is, a point of frustration within the Vancouver scene. During her time at Terminal City and then Only Magazine, Sarah and her team actively tried to disrupt superficiality through music waste and its promotion.
We often wrote sort of silly reviews of the bands that were, again, meant to just not take it too seriously. And who wants to read, you know, 85 band descriptions that are all just like talking about how great they are and how they're the next so-and-so, or, you know, how they're breaking boundaries and coming up with a new sound. It just seemed more fun to kind of make up funny stuff or tell, you know, funny stories that we knew about them. We were just so sick of bands trying to sell themselves to us, I guess.
Now, the festival's approach to actively pushing back against industry norms wasn't necessarily shared across the local scene. Bands trying to propel themselves beyond Vancouver work hard to cultivate image and press kits and didn't appreciate being called out for it.
Some of them were offensive, actually, I should say, in retrospect, that some of them were really too far and were just like vulgar and awful and rude. And some of them were maybe too true and were sort of actually poking fun at people. Something weird happened that was sort of a protest to music waste. And I think what happened was, this must have been in 2005 or six, and it was at the Columbia or Mike's Tavern. But the band, the Book of Lists, were boycotting. And then for some reason at the last minute, they decided to just like hijack a show and play. So we just like got a bunch of texts that that they were setting up at the show. And I don't know, maybe they were friends with the other bands that were playing, but they like set up and played a short set. And Cam and I like biked down there as quick as we could to watch them. And it was like kind of great because it was, you know, they were sort of mad at us or they were sort of doing it as a protest or something. But we thought it was really great, and it was really kind of fun to have a surprise, or to have, you know, a show sort of be sabotaged in a way that resulted in people getting to see a great band.
But this don't take yourself too seriously attitude fueled the largest criticism of the festival: artistic elitism.
Antagonism sort of between some bands or some artists and what they perceive as like some sort of snobby or elite group of people who are putting this on. But I think that's just based on a misconception that these people are being snobby or elitist, because they do have to choose a limited number of bands.
There are times that we have to make a decision and say, okay, no, this band has played quite a few years in a row, and we should give that spot to a new up-and-coming act. In the most part, I find that in the general spirit of the festival, bands are very supportive and kind of manage that themselves even.
Although Music Waste does frequently see many of the same faces, the turnover is fairly regular. During his tenure on the committee, Mark Richardson was tasked with scheduling the festival and recognized the emergence of new, younger acts.
Because Music Waste, they take a lot of chances on newer bands and younger bands. There's obviously a lot of familiar faces that you'll see from years past. But there's always try to make sure that there are new younger bands being selected each year, and that draws in their fan base or their friends. So I think if you do that year after year, you're just going to keep drawing in new people.
There was not enough infrastructure for emerging and weird local bands to sort of showcase themselves in a sustainable way, and I think that the more you support musicians, the more musicians support you. And historically, we've tried to be as inclusive as possible and allow people to have music waste shows, like to put on their own shows if they can find a venue and make it happen if they didn't get in. And we tried to support them with as much promotion as possible if they were willing to accept passes.
In making music more available and more accessible, Music Waste has opened the door to the community and has allowed artistic integrity to remain at the forefront of the scene rather than who you know or how much money you have.
Music Waste has consistently been very inexpensive, so the passes are $15, and that, if you think about the fact that in the past 20 years, like, everything has gotten more expensive in the world, the fact that it has remained this low price is incredibly remarkable. It's really important to everybody to keep it inexpensive, so I don't see that changing anytime soon. Or at all. I don't see that changing ever. Actually, I think Music Waste would probably stop existing before it got more expensive.
This is the commitment Music Waste has made to Vancouver. But, like, whatever. Music provided by Future Star, Devours, and Pavel. You can find them and a whole bunch of other bands from Vancouver on Bandcamp. Thanks to CGSF 90.1 FM, and special thanks to Eleanor Waring, Dustin Bromley, Mark Richardson, and Sarah Cordingly. I'm Jamie Sesford. Thanks for listening.